Your name. I've forgotten your name. I've seen you, but I don't know your name.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston.
We have business to discuss.
ESPN 97.5, a Gao Media station.
I see your death.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, hour number two of The Big Show. It is The Usual Suspects on a Tuesday here at ESPN 97.5. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel. Continue to roll on before we wrap up some of the baseball talk, and we will get to more as it warrants it with the people that are wanting to be heard from. Do want to make sure that you guys are aware of the fact that the times have been announced for the first two games of the Astros-Indians series in Houston. Both day games, not shocking when you know that the Red Sox and probably the Yankees are going to be involved, but game one on Friday is a 1:05 p.m. start. Game two Saturday, 3:37. Both will be on TBS with a broadcast team of Don Orsillo, Dennis Eckersley, and Hazel May. And the Astros have named their starters for the first four games, or three with a penciled in fourth. Verlander in a massive matchup.
It's going to be good.
Against Corey Kluber in game one. Gerrit Cole against Carrasco in game two. Game three has Keuchel, and if you believe everybody, that, and including Terry Francona now with the Indians, it is not going to be Trevor Bauer. That Trevor Bauer is going to be used out of the pen for at least the first three games, and they're going to see if he gets some work in and how he looks and feels, and then consider him for game four. So who's the kid with the Clevinger? So Mike Clevinger is going to go opposite of Dallas Keuchel in game three. And then from an Astros perspective, A.J. Hinch has Charlie Morton penciled in for game four.
Okay. Good to see Morton hitting 97 on the gun in his last outing.
That's all I was watching.
So, yeah, I don't care about results or anything like that. But the fact that he hit 97 was great. They talked to him after the game. He said he's feeling fine, that he's ready to go. So that's a good sign. It does surprise me, though, that if that were the case, you wouldn't flip him and Keuchel.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But
because Keuchel has not looked great in his last couple starts.
I get it, though, because you're like, you figure you'll win one of those first two matchups, probably, if you can get away with not having to pitch Morton and win a second game, or with Keuchel, maybe you win all three. Who knows? I don't know. It's not a rest thing, because there's plenty of time in between.
Well, how are you feeling about Keuchel?
I feel okay. Keuchel's one of those guys that, to me, I don't know why this I have to say it like this, but he's like Ken Giles to me. He doesn't bother me because when he needs to be effective, he is. There are times when he doesn't do well.
You're saying when the lights are brightest, he steps
usually
up.
Comes through. I mean, I get that feeling anyways. I don't have any numbers in front of me to back that up, but I feel like when the team needs Keuchel, he shows up. So okay. We'll see.
It should be interesting. But yeah. Like I said, look, you know what? And the more I think about this, and the more I was like, well, I don't know if I'll say that because I think people will rip me for it. But I'll tell you this right now. I think the two best teams top to bottom in baseball are playing in the opening round series. And I think that in the Astros and the Indians, I think the winner of this series wins it all.
I probably agree with you that the winner of this series is going to be my favorite. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I agree with you about the best teams in baseball.
I just think there's no question marks with these two teams. The fact that the Indians had some holes in their lineup, but then they go and they trade for Josh Donaldson. And we talked about it. And Trevor Bauer is a big question mark for them because that's a guy that you had penciled in so they could go four deep with their rotation. I said this before. I don't think any rotation in baseball comes close to the Astros with the exception of the Cleveland Indians. And so in looking at everything, all things considered, offense, defense, pitching, and bullpen, Yankees have question marks with their...
See, that's where you get me, though, the bullpen.
I know. I get that, right? And I know the Indians' bullpen is but their starters are just so good. And we know that the least amount of innings used by a bullpen this year was the Astros because their starters were so damn good. Indians, their starters are pretty darn close to mirroring what the Astros have in the starting rotation. When I look at the rest of baseball, especially in the American League, I mean, Sale, who knows what Sale you're going to get because he's been dinged up. And even in the innings that he's tried to get a couple innings here and there to start just to get ready for the playoffs, he's been hit a little bit. He hasn't looked like himself. And you don't know what David Price is going to do. So I think there's lots of question marks with their rotation. You look at the Yankees, and again, for everything, Severino has been great all, most of the season, but lately Severino's been iffy. And the rest of their rotation with Sabathia and guys like that. And obviously the Sonny Gray experiment didn't work. I think there's question marks with all the other teams, especially in the American League, but I think the two best teams, good and bad,
but the Indians have a question mark. That's the thing. When you look at Boston,
their bullpen.
Yeah, and it's not even close. Boston at least has a top 10 bullpen to go along with the best offense in baseball. And a starting rotation that, I mean, you can say throw health in there for anybody. What if Morton's shoulder acts up? Sure. What if Bauer continues to struggle with his injuries? So it's one of those things that I think if you, for me anyways, I would say that the Astros and the Red Sox are the two best teams in baseball. Cleveland is damn good and they can hang with anybody, but that bullpen was so bad for so long this year that I wouldn't trust it. It's why I think the Astros win this series in five, because it's not that if you look at the two games that Kluber pitched in, he left with leads. And it was the bullpen that coughed up the runs that the Astros would score in those games. And it's kind of been like that most of the year. Yeah, so I think when at least Boston has a top 10 bullpen in baseball. I mean, it's not the greatest,
but it's good. I just
think there's
a lot of Astros fans that think it's going to be this huge travesty and upset if they lose to the Indians. And I'm like, look, that's a damn good team on the other side that I don't think people are giving enough credit to.
I think the good thing, the good news is for the Indians is that when you get into postseason play, if your starting pitching is strong, which is this is the complete opposite of the A's, but on a team like Cleveland, like Houston, you guys are going to go an extra inning. They're gonna. Your bullpen now doesn't have to go out and give you four, five, or six outs per guy necessarily. So you can run a guy out there for a matchup, a one-on-one, one batter, one pitcher, and that's it. And then so it gives you a better advantage with your bullpen than you would say in a regular season game where things are a little bit different. You might pull a guy after five innings just because. Things are going to be a little so agreed there that maybe the bullpen shows a little bit better for the Indians, but I think well-rounded wise, I think the Red Sox are probably just because of that though.
Okay, all right. Key wants to get in here on Red Sox Yankees, assuming that happens. I guess Key, what's up?
How y'all doing?
What's up,
man? I'm not a Charlie Pulido fan or a baseball fan, but I was stuck in a car for an hour, so I had to listen to him talk about baseball, and I don't understand this. Not the so-called fans, but the media. Why does a Boston New York game be more important than whoever the Astros playing? And it's not just in baseball, but like in every sport. Why does the Packers Steelers Super Bowl matter more than like the Saints Colts Super Bowl in basketball? Why does the Lakers Celtics championship count more than Milwaukee Bucks and whoever they're playing? I don't get why the media feels like if it's these certain power teams or old teams don't make the playoffs, then the playoffs aren't as important. But it's only like 30-something teams, so whoever the best, that should be the most interesting. So well, since y'all is somewhat like media, can y'all explain that to me?
I mean,
appreciate the call, Key. I like that we're somewhat like media. First of all, I don't even know. I don't think we're considered media.
It's a ongoing thing.
Media to
people
me,
like to call us.
We don't
media
cover then, teams. We talk about them. We don't cover the media. Covers these teams,
but media
right?
Also, in another regard, is radio, TV, and print.
Oh, we are media. Oh God, I hate the media.
But here's the thing, Key. To answer your
media
question,
sucks.
This isn't about the media. This is about the networks, and the networks play to revenue, and revenue is driven by the top markets. And so, to answer your question as short as possible. L.A., Chicago, New York, they're
Boston.
Going to take priority, and Boston are going to take priority every single time. And the true sports fan and the true fan of a sport that loves to see whatever matchup that you want to see is completely disregarded when it comes to, I could have two of the three or four top major markets in the country where I know I'm going to get a ton of viewership, which translates to a ton of money, or I could have small market versus small market. It might be the best basketball, baseball, or football you've seen or want to see, you ain't seen it.
Here's your top 10 media markets in order. You ready? New York 1, LA 2, Chicago 3. So that tells you a lot right there of why they're always jazzed if it's the Cubs and the Red Sox, the Cubs and the Yankees, the Dodgers and the Yankees. That'll tell you a lot right there.
Right.
Philly is 4, Dallas, Fort Worth is 5. San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose 6, DC 7, Houston 8, Boston 9, Atlanta 10.
Nick, to your point yesterday and to the point that we were talking about, one, Dallas is a bigger TV market.
5.
So Dallas is going to get that whole kind of look, the feel, hate. Credit, hate that we're talking about when you're compared with Houston. And two, Houston, for being the fourth largest city in America,
eighth
getting real
market.
Close to being third with Chicago in terms of population. Yeah, eighth in terms of TV market. So,
but is that because they don't take into account the metro area, and it's just the?
I mean, again,
because when you think about how far Houston area TV signals go,
but before it gets there, it's already pretty big. I mean, there's got to be another reason for it because it's already pretty big before it gets.
Because you figure in New York, it's New York, New Jersey, there's a whole...
A lot of it has to do with how often, like, viewership. So, like, how often your TVs are on, you know, because they're monitoring everything, and it's a lot different than the archaic way they review radio.
Oh, God, radio ratings are stupid.
For ratings.
Even though we kick butt, they're still stupid.
The Nielsen ratings, they know when your TV's on, and it registers what you're watching and how many people are watching, and that's how the markets are contracted.
They know when you're
naked,
Joel, just FYI.
Yeah, when your wife goes, oh, no.
Don't throw that in my face now. Get out of here.
Well, I hope you didn't try to throw that in anyone else's face.
It's not going to rain, but it looked like it. It still looks like off.
It did rain. It rained when it was like sunny. You just couldn't see it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it's like off in the distance, it still looks foggy. Like there's,
it was brief, but it was.
Barely back with the Doppler radar of the 7-day forecast. Don't go anywhere. It's more The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, knee deep hour number two of the big show.
Huh?
Hour
number two, where we'll take your phone balls.
Phone balls and hour number two. My bad. I'm sorry. You said it. I couldn't help. What do you
expect us to do? Mad at us.
No, I'm waiting for Barry to take it from there.
If I would have said hour number toe.
I didn't say toe.
I would have made totally, fun of you too. Did he say toe?
You did.
Kind of.
You totally said toe.
We both mocked you right
totally,
when you said it.
Guys, you both mocked me on every segment.
It's right
That's
there.
True too.
I'm so. You guys just talk over all my jokes now. It's not even good.
Nick, Joel, Douchey McDouche.
Totally get it? Toe? Just totally.
I was talking to
That's Cole. A dad joke.
I know. That's why I was hoping you would
dong you?
It. No, don't dong.
Thank you.
Damn it.
Thank you.
Whatevs.
Patrick Mahomes is the real deal, as Nick has told us from the get-go. That game last night, I mean, I'm sitting here going, if there's a game where he's going to struggle a little bit. It's Denver in Denver, big time crowd. Even, you know, pregame, they were talking about the crowd is hyped and with the altitude, this is going to be a tough place for him to play.
Didn't at one point during the game, they're like, the stadium is shaking. Mile High is actually shaking.
Did you see that stupid mini stadium they built?
Yeah, what was that? Just
where
as
they were looking at what, do something with the remaining 16 seats that they saved from the old Mile so High, stupid. Which is not like an iconic stadium. And people are just sitting there, and they go, you know what, seats 160 people. Well, good. If you want an intimate concert venue, we got you covered. And then they do the aerial, and you can see it's like a half mile away from the stadium, too. I'm like, what is that?
Just silly.
The left-handed pass to me was amazing.
That was it kind of shows you – I liked what they said. I forget who it was. I think it was Tim Hasselbeck?
Yep.
Who was breaking it down afterwards, but he said that's not something that you plan. That's just an instinct that takes over, and it lets you know where this kid is as a quarterback and as a football player and as an athlete, that on the run like that, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone do that.
I expected him to crap on it. So he liked it. Tim Hasselbeck.
No, he loved it because he talked about the creativity as a quarterback.
I hate saying this because Favre, the comparison's already there. I've seen Favre
They were talking about comparing him to Favre a lot.
And I do. I hate that comparison.
Did he do just a left-handed pass before?
Yeah, and he's done switch hands. And Favre's done lefty flips, lefty grabbing the laces.
I mean, I could see a Peyton Manning doing something like that or a Tom Brady. And I'm by no means comparing Patrick Mahomes to Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, but I'm just saying when you get guys at that level, they're it's like Jordan shooting free throws with his eyes closed. It's one of those types of deals, which is why that was so impressive, because this kid is really a nobody and a nothing in the NFL right now. He's just getting started. He's got an entire career ahead of him, and he's already doing highlight reel plays like that.
It's hard not to like this kid, though.
He says the right things. Yep. He does the right things. And you know what? He makes the right decisions on the football field, and he's got the arm to back it up.
Because
some of those throws.
I was going to say, everybody's going to talk about just the left-handed throw, but when you look at the strength, we all knew he had a cannon coming in, but when you see the accuracy with the strength and some of the ways he pushes the ball up the field, you're like, wow, no wonder they traded up to get him.
One of the ones that I thought was really impressive, I don't know that anyone really made a huge deal out of it, but he was rolling to his left. He throws across his body.
To Kelsey,
across the field.
Yes.
They always tell you, first of all, especially guys like, you know, Peyton Manning, who didn't have the strongest arm, he would have never made a throw like that because his wobbly duck would have floated and been picked off. But the fact that he can roll to his left, throw to his right, and do so on the other side of the field is just ridiculous.
Yeah, he has a cannon. And the thing is, you know what? The Texans got it right with Deshaun. The Chiefs obviously got it right by trading up to get Mahomes.
Did they.
And I'll tell you this, the team that looks the worst, even though for 1 week they look the best, the Bears trading all the way up to take Trubisky.
But he went off too, though.
I guess what I said, for 1 week against a piss-poor Tampa Bay defense. Yeah. But overall, to trade all the way up to two, and you were worried about the Niners were going to take him at three, but you look at these two kids that were after him and how great they already have become in less time, man. Because I'm not sold on the Bears. I saw somebody the other day say, the Bears are winning. I think it was Greenberg said, the Bears are winning the division. The Bears are going to win the division because of Mitchell Trubisky in week four, whatever it is. I'm like, the defense, absolutely fantastic. The offense, he's going to have to show it to me on a more consistent basis before I even start saying that he's good.
Now, are you just saying that as a Packers fan?
Nope, I'm saying as a football fan because and then I'm looking at it from a draft perspective too, going, the Chiefs and the Texans got it right. I'm sure they were happy as hell he got off the board when he did. Because it was a team to not worry about that got their guy. But boy, those other two guys look like they're far better.
They were, for all intents and purposes, they were beating the Packers. And they probably should have beat the Packers. Packers. Yeah. They put up 23 on the Packers. They put up 24 on the Seahawks. 16 against the Cardinals, which they probably should have scored a lot more. And 48 on the Bucks. I mean, I'm not saying that Mitch Trubisky is, you know, the second coming or anything, but he certainly, this isn't an offense that's sputtering necessarily.
Well, I mean, to me, look, I think with Trubisky, it's going to be about accuracy. And like you just said about Mahomes, making the right read and then making the right throw. Tampa's defense is just awful.
Yes.
And so we're going to see as they continue to progress in the season when they play Minnesota twice. You know, they still have to play some tough opponents with
Minnesota's
some above average.
Minnesota's
defense hasn't been good right to this point, but they still have enough talent where they can get it together. And again, Minnesota plays Philadelphia this week. They played the Rams last week. So there's enough weapons to make your defense look a little shaky. Green Bay, same way. Regardless of what you say about their overall team and defense, offensively, even with Rodgers with a dinged up leg, they can do some things offensively to kind of make you look less than world beaters. But I think overall, by the time we get to the end of the season, the Vikings defense is going to be above average.
Sure.
So we'll see what happens when the Bears play teams like that.
I mean, dude, there's only four teams in the NFC that are scoring more points than the Bears right now.
Yeah. Well.
So it's not like, again,
but your average goes way up when you score as many points as they did a week ago.
Well, sure. I mean, but
he just hates the Bears. It's obvious.
Well, I mean, that's a obviously. Fact, but I'm trying not to let that show on the air. I'm just saying overall, I'm Bears, evaluating Rockets. Trubisky as a, right, Adam Clanton. I mean, if we just keep going.
That was great.
Just go right down the line. I mean, my biggest thing with the Bears, I'm just analyzing Trubisky as a quarterback.
If you hook me up to a lie detector, I'm agreeing with you. But I'm just saying that I think it's too soon to dismiss him, but it's also too soon to anoint Patrick Mahomes. He's been impressive.
And you know what? And
but
I
you know what? Deshaun Watson was really impressive for his first six games, and look what the kind of year he's having. It's not great. It's not terrible. I think he's going to be a great, you know, NFL quarterback if he can stay healthy, but teams will figure you out. Teams are going to figure out this offense. I love what Andy Reid is doing with the play calls. I love that it's got a college feel to the offense, and then he's not afraid to run some college stuff. You know, it's great. It's fun and exciting, but defensive coordinators are going to figure this out.
But you also make a great point. Don't think for a second that Andy Reid isn't a big part of Mahomes right
now.
Oh,
huge. Yeah. Because if you put Patrick Mahomes on some other teams.
Like the Texans with Bill O'Brien.
Exactly.
That would be interesting,
no way,
right?
that kid is. Andy Reid was the perfect person for Mahomes.
Absolutely right. All right, we're going to continue to roll on, and we want you to be a part of the show. So if you have something on your mind you want to get off your chest, we'd love to hear from you. 713-780-3776. You can get with us, and we will get with you. We will have plenty more to get to as we get ready for the second half of the show. But before we do that...
Yeah, before we do that, I want to tell you guys about Vortex. In fact, I brought my stuff going to work out today. Anybody want to join me? Head on out to 1707 West Gray. It's Vortex. Vortex is Houston's first and only multi-sensory indoor cycling and boxing studio. Today, I'm taking one of the Rumble classes. They call it Rumble, Ride, and Refuel. And that's because they have the Rumble classes, which are boxing, the Ride classes, which are spin classes, and then the Refuel is that they have a bar there that serves like smoothies and after post-workout drinks. So you can get one of those there, get some, you know, refuel your body. But I'm going to be doing the Rumble class today, a boxing class. It's really cool. It's 45 minutes long. Great workout. And don't think for one second that it's because it's a boxing workout that it's only going to work out your arms. This is a full body workout. After I did it the last time, my legs were sore for two straight days. So it's a full body workout. It's a great workout. So are the spin classes. Both really good workouts. You burn a lot of calories. I love the gym too. It's new. It's luxurious, but it's affordable. With $25 classes for your spin or your Rumble classes, $40 for unlimited walk-in classes for 1 week, and a monthly unlimited Rumble or Ride membership for only $195. I'm excited. I haven't done a spin class yet, but I'm looking forward to Thursday because I'm going to do one after work here. And Vortex is the only spin studio in Houston that has three rows of bikes, so 48 bikes total that you can get on there and work out with. And look, one of the things that's important is when you work out, you don't want to work out next to a bunch of ugly dudes. Not happening at Vortex. I'm telling you right now, 4-to-1 ratio when I was there last time. The scenery was nice. I'll just say that. And you know what? The best part is you don't need equipment. They have it all for you. When I got there, they gave me some hand wraps. I used their boxing gloves. They have the shoes for the spin classes. So you just show up in your workout gear, ready to go, get in shape, and have some fun doing it. And look, if you can't meet me there at 5:45 today, they have morning classes. So they have mornings. They have afternoons. You take your pick. You can sign up and rent your bikes or reserve your bike, online at vortextexas.com. Don't forget, 1707 West Gray is the location. 281-501-3094 is the number. But for more information, including that phone number and how to get a bike rented or meet me over there tonight, it's vortextexas.com.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
You guys ready to crawl? Why not, right? Pub crawl's coming. ESPN 97.5, SportsRap 94.1. Making it a Houston thing, Saturday, October the 20th. It's the first ever Houston Sports Pub Crawl. It's brought to you by Thrive Plus. It's going to be in the biggest group of Houstonians, all sports fans, and led by our very own Fred Fowler. They're going to be repping their favorite Houston sports teams and indulging at the hottest pubs, bars, and restaurants downtown on Main Street. Get your tickets now before prices go up. Tickets come with the limited edition Houston Sports Be Someone shirt, a pub crawl wristband, a cup, a koozie, hey, and cheap drinks, $3 a drink. That's not bad. Tickets available now, htxpubcrawls.com. htxpubcrawls.com. Hurry before the ticket prices go up. Get in on it right now and join Fred and the crew on a sportsy kind of pub crawl on October the 20th.
Somebody asked, does Andy Reid go sit down with quarterbacks on the bench in the past, or has he done that? I don't think so.
Oh, he has. Because he's essentially the offensive coordinator, too,
I don't ever recall seeing that, or maybe it just wasn't a big deal.
That's because it's hard for him to sit. But he's just a large man. But if he doesn't get winded, he doesn't go, you know, he'll go to the bench and sit down from time to time. But I think, obviously, he's going to do it more so with a young quarterback, essentially a rookie quarterback, where he needs to coach him up more.
I just don't recall seeing that. But you might be right because of the fact that he's also calling the plays. And then now Hefe brought up a great point about how they were just trying to force that whole Showtime nickname, Showtime Mahomes, down our throat.
Uh-huh. And the other one that Ryan Clark's using is Mahomie.
Oh, my God.
It's Mahomie, Pat Mahomes. Look, the nicknames are coming out of the woodwork.
That's horrible. Yeah, stop that.
But, you know, again, I just like the poise the kid shows, the way he handles everything. Pre-game, post-game, any interactions. Even when you're talking about with Andy Reid, he's listening, but he's also interacting and giving him his perspective. And you can tell Kelsey was the guy that, obviously, he's very outspoken.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelsey, even on some of the balls that were thrown behind him, he kept, you know, making sure, pointing to him and talking to him. And one, Mahomes looked like he kind of apologized for not leading him. And then when he started, because they tried several times to hook up in the first half and they were unsuccessful. But when he started completing balls, you could tell the respect that Kelsey has for him already with the way he reacted with him. So you can tell he's got that locker room believing in him and backing him, which is the first step, which is very big.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a good win. You go on the road in the division, and you go out there and, you know, you basically, what was it, less than 3 minutes left to go, or right at the 3 minute mark when they scored the go ahead touchdown.
But that game wasn't over.
Time. No, it wasn't over. But
here's what I don't like: everybody on the flip side.
You had two quarterbacks with that needed a drive to win the game. Mm-hmm. Mahomes goes down and does his part. He gets 8 plays, 60 yards. I think there was like 3 minutes left, maybe less than that.
No, there was less when Denver got the ball for the final drive. It was like a minute and 47, I think.
Oh, well, see, that's even more. I thought it was like 3 minutes left. Maybe it was a 3 minute drive, what I saw on the box score. But to do that on the road in the division?
It was great. That's impressive. At the same time, the broadcast, for as much as they wanted to prop up Mahomes, was kind of on the poo-poo on Case Keenum and being critical. And, of course, he missed the wide open game winner.
That's the difference, though, right?
I mean, the hook and ladder like Mahomes at the end, which people are criticizing. But
by the way, sorry, is it hook and ladder or hook and lateral? Because I've always heard it hook and lateral.
Because
it's a lateral.
That's one you can add to the list, but it's always been referred to as the hook and ladder.
But it's hook and lateral because it's
hook and literally
ladder. It's hook and ladder?
Yeah. Well, actually, there's two. There's hook and lateral, and there's hook and hook ladder.
There's, yeah, the hook. Some people will call it the hook and lateral because you run a button hook, is the old school term for a stick route or stop route. You just run out of 10 yards or 20 yards, whatever it is, turn around,
make a hook. It's interchangeable.
Okay.
For football speak.
Okay.
It's interchangeable.
Because I hear hook and ladder, and I'm like, what the
Add
hell?
Add that to your list.
What ladder? What ladder? Where does ladder come into play? It's a lateral pass to another receiver running behind you. But whatever. Sorry.
Because you know what? As much as it was criticized, it had a chance. I don't know that I don't think he scores on it, but I think it's the best way for them to have gotten the first down and gotten out of bounds to prolong the game and save some clock. But I just hate the way Keenum gets pooped on all the time.
Do you have to do that, or why not just have different levels, have a short and intermediate out routes on both sides?
Well, because they're guarding the sideline as it is. Because there were still two defenders in the area. That's why you run a short and intermediate on both sides.
Now you've got, I mean, you just, if you have enough out routes.
Because again, if he catches, just catches the ball, he's going to get the first down. It's just a matter of, can you get up and spike it in time
to save
it for one more play as well. But they tried to obviously get the first down and get out of bounds. And with that, they set up that play. I wasn't mad at that, but as much as everybody's criticizing Keenum for missing that pass too, and everybody's banging on Elway for bringing in Keenum and how he can't evaluate quarterbacks for as good a quarterback as he's been and wasting first round picks on Paxton Lynch, I don't think that Case played that bad.
I do.
You do?
Yeah, I don't think he's not at all. He's not nowhere near what he was in Minnesota. But then again, neither is Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
I think that speaks to who was coaching them in Minnesota, because both of these guys haven't looked the same since.
And Shurmur was that guy. Shurmur, now the head coach of the Giants. Mm-hmm. But he did make those two guys look good. And that brings it right back home when you start talking about coaching has an effect on the quarterback. And you look at Mahomes, right in your backyard with Watson and Mahomes.
But overall, I just
hate him crapping all over Keenum. Look, he busted his ass and earned, whether it was going to be in Minnesota or elsewhere, he earned what he got.
He's earned the opportunity, but I just don't know that he has the skill set to keep it.
Yeah, I don't know that he's a franchise quarterback for the long haul.
Exactly, because if he was, he would have had this opportunity and held on to it a lot sooner. He's like Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's a younger version of Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I would not disagree with that.
He's going to make some plays with his feet. He's going to make some plays with his arm, and he's going to do some dumbass things that lose you games.
But the point I was getting at is he made some good throws last night, and when he made them, they weren't jumping on those. Yeah. But everything Mahomes did was like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, but you also consider that it's Mahomes. I mean, outside of it, it's essentially he's still a rookie. I know that he had the one game last year, so he lost that status. But for the most part, the kids started five games. So I see why they're jumping all over that.
Okay. All right, before we go to break, Knuckles wants to get in here. Knuckles, what's up?
Hey, what's up, gentlemen?
Knuckles.
I have a question for you, Joel. A couple questions. Aaron Rodgers' injury, is it going to heal on its own, like during the offseason, or is it something he has to get surgery on? And if so, are you willing as a fan to accept him playing this year on a bad leg and losing maybe?
Well,
and getting it taken care of on offseason and essentially missing next season?
No, see, here's the thing. First of all, Knuckles, and we had Dr. Chow on, and he was like, it's an MCL sprain. It'll take 2 to 4 weeks. You could tell it was night and day better this week in the fact that the brace was smaller. His mobility was much better. He was actually running and sliding and called runs where he was mobile, more mobile than he has been. It's going to affect him still for a couple more weeks. But to get to your second question, if it wasn't something that we knew what it was and we didn't know if it needed surgery, fact of the matter is that's your franchise quarterback for the next 5 to 7 years on a big time deal. If it ain't right, you better fix it. And if it means sacrificing this year so that he's right for the long haul, you got to do it because he's just too good. And he is your whole team. Because I was talking to some of my buddies back home during and after the Packer game this weekend and said, you know what? They haven't done enough over the length of his career to put good quality players around him to give him opportunities to win. And they don't realize how bad it's going to be when he goes away because it's so hard to find that guy. And we've seen it here in Houston over and over with all the quarterbacks in Cleveland and Chicago and all the other cities that have experienced it as well. I don't think Packer fans realize how spoiled they've been to go from Favre to Rodgers. And I don't think the Packers as an organization have done enough to put guys around him to give him a chance to win. So, Knuckles, appreciate the call. We'll continue to roll. Before we get to anything else, I do want to tell you about the good people at Infuse Energy. I've told you about them in the past. Josh Pesikoff was here in studio last week. And Josh is the guy that's going to tell it to you straight. He's a Houston guy. It's a locally owned and operated company with Houstonians in mind. And He's great at telling you that they're going to be 100% honest. They want to build a relationship with you. They want to make sure that you're happy with your energy provider and that they can do all that they can do to try and make sure that they tailor make a program and have customer service built-in features to make sure that you're happy with them during the time that you are with them. They're going to start with the fact that you're going to get a person on the phone when you call. You're not going to get an automated system. They're going to ask you as many questions as you ask them because they want to know if it's for a business, is it for your family, when do you use energy the most, when you use it the least. And they go from there. You mention us at ESPN 97.5, you get a $25 bill credit, and then they continue to go until they find a tailor-made plan that works best for you. They're going to make sure that they never try to pull the wool over your eyes. They're going to make sure that you understand that it's 100% green energy. You can sign up, you get a green plan, it offsets your electricity use, you get renewable energy credits. It decreases your carbon footprint, but more so than anything else, it's going to save you money. And I know because I made the switch over a year ago, the reduction in my bill over a 12-month period is ridiculous. It's surpassed over $1,000, and that's important. And the fact that they're going to be there to communicate with you throughout and make sure that if you have changes that need to be made or things that are bothering you, you get a weekly usage report so you can see when you're using energy the most, when you use it the least, what hours of the day, what it could be doing, what certain things are on that could be causing the energy usage so you can manage it more effectively. It's affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that always has your back. Give them a call at 844-INFUSE2. That's 844-463-8732 or log on to infuseenergy.com. Infuse energy into your life.
ESPN 97.5.
There's a place off Ocean
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back out number 2 3-hour show. It is The Usual Suspects on a Tuesday. Nick, Barry, Joel, all present and accounted for. Covering some ground, bouncing around, having some fun. Talked a little bit about Monday Night Football. Talked about baseball playoffs and Astros. Still talking about lots of things in the sports world and otherwise, including the relatives coming into the Laminack Palatial Manor this weekend and the fact that someone crapped all over Barry's lawn by leaving tire tracks, which I would be pissed off at, too. We're in the process of obtaining the video so that we can review it, so that we can get to the bottom of it. But there is a deep concern with people already trying to do pre-registration and check-in at the Laminack Hotel Mansion for the weekend.
Not a hotel. Just a
Can't wait for the kids to trounce your entire house.
Humble abode. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that. You want some news and notes from the NFL?
Please.
So, Houston Texans wide receiver Will Fuller was not removed for precautionary reasons in Game 4, according to head coach Bill O'Brien, who told reporters he'll see how it goes this week. And his status for Week 5 is up in the air. Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott is dealing with both an ankle injury and knee bursitis. Head coach Jason Garrett is optimistic that he'll be able to practice and play this week. So that's the relative news coming out of the Sunday night matchup between Texans and Cowboys. I'll read some of this other stuff. I'll save this other one for last, the news on Le'Veon Bell, because I want us to discuss that. But real quick, Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski missed practice on Monday. Leonard Fournette is expected to miss at least 2 weeks with his hamstring injury. Jameis Winston has officially replaced Ryan Fitzpatrick as starter. Dirk Cotter announced that he will start week 6 versus the Falcons after the Bucs bye week this week in week 5. And Dalvin Cook, Minnesota running back, told reporters Monday that he'll need more time before his injured hamstring is, quote, 100% again. So not good news for the Vikings there. And lastly, on the list of stuff that I had for news and notes, Le'Veon Bell is expected to report to the team during their week 7 bye week, according to sources. So my question to you is it too little too late? This is a Steelers team that is 1-2-1. Their upcoming two games before the bye week is Atlanta and Cincinnati. Those are not winnable games. Those are winnable games, but those are not guaranteed wins for the Steelers.
Those are good opponents.
The Falcons have not played great this year. They've also run into probably, I haven't even looked, but I'd be willing to bet you that they've had one of the most difficult schedules already this year in facing the Eagles, the Panthers, the Saints, and the Bengals. They only had the one win against the Panthers, but that's a pretty formidable schedule to open the season with. I think the Falcons are better than their 1-3 record. Cincinnati's playing good football.
Yep. Better than anybody would have expected.
And that Steelers game, so they're at home versus Atlanta, but then they have to go on the road and play the Bengals. And I think even if they split those, you're looking at a 2-3-1 Pittsburgh team that's finally going to get their running back.
Here's the thing. You and I talked about this yesterday, and I said it just looked like that locker room is even more in disarray than it was before this whole thing really got legs. And I think everybody in that locker room thought week two might be as late as it gets before he comes back. Now he's laying it out there and saying week 7 or week 8. And
from he's coming back during the bye week, essentially.
So, and again, ESPN is saying either 7 or 8, and he's kicking it around. He shouldn't be kicking it around at all because of the two opponents you mentioned. Cincinnati, it has double meaning because it's a divisional game. Mm-hmm. And his teammates, whether they're going to come back and say, hey, we broke the unwritten rule, we never should have talked, we shouldn't talk money, that's our bad, or they're going to stay adamant in the fact that they said from the get-go, you should be with us regardless of what you're trying to do to get your money, you still are one of our brothers trying to win games and we need you. If he is going to wait that long when he comes back in, I just think it adds more strife in the locker room, more problems with the team, and I don't think that they straighten anything out. So for that being said, I think it's too little, too late.
I'm with you. I wanted to look at the schedule because so let's assume they split the Atlanta Cincinnati game. Mm-hmm. All right, they're 2-3-1.
Okay,
they have Cleveland, that's a win.
Yep. Should be.
Yeah. Baltimore on the road.
Tough one.
Mm-hmm. They just lost.
At home.
At home to Baltimore. Carolina at home. Not easy.
Nope.
Jacksonville on the road. Denver on the road. Yeah, so that's back-to-back tough road games.
Yeah.
Los Angeles at home. The Raiders road. Chargers.
Okay.
The Raiders on the road, the Patriots at home, the Saints on the road, and the Bengals at home to close out the season.
Not an easy schedule at all.
So you look at that. Let's assume they beat Cleveland. They'll probably lose to Baltimore on the road. Mm-hmm. Carolina's a tough game to call.
Yeah, their defense is better. Especially with Le'Veon
Bell back, though. They're going to be better offensively.
I think the problem with the Steelers is defensively. If they had Le'Veon Bell this week with that schedule, with the way they've looked in disarray, I say the Steelers aren't a playoff team.
They are?
They're not.
Oh,
even with him on the field.
Even with him on the field starting right now this week, based on everything we've seen.
Doesn't the disarray go away when you're getting back?
But here's the thing.
I think it's a come to Jesus meeting. Everybody sits down and says, look, it's over.
I'm actually
we can't change it.
Let's
move forward.
I think what you should do is search for the best possible. Obviously, you're going for the best possible situation if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? If he's willing to come back, hey, are you done with the holdout? We'll have you
move forward
and deal with the locker room stuff later and address that with the team. If he's not, we're still hearing trades. And if you have something you're willing to offer us, we'll hear that. Look for the best possible situation because you just mentioned the schedule, Barry. It's obviously very difficult. Mm-hmm. I think you go for the best possible situation. A, see if he's willing to end the holdout. If not, we'll take you. Try to be objective as possible because you're kind of in a bad situation. Take him, and then if you'll find out very quickly if the locker room is divided, and if not, continue to hear trades. If you can get something relatively close to a Le'Veon Bell in return or something of value, go for that as well. I think you search for the best possible situation. I think those are the only two options because a lot of it is dependent on Le'Veon Bell and what he's going to do.
Here's the one factor that we talked about the other day that we haven't brought up in this discussion today, and it's very, very relevant. Big Ben has looked like crap. And but even when he's upright, he's making bad decisions, and he's not throwing it like he used to. And I think that has to factor in, too, with the schedule. And that's why I said, even if Le'Veon Bell came back this week, I would be very skeptical to say the Steelers even make the playoffs now, based on all of the intangibles with the locker room and everything else, and the fact that they got off to a slow start.
Odds are against them, for sure. There's no doubt. But, I mean, we've seen Big Ben struggle before and then bounce back.
Yeah.
You know, he at one point he said, maybe I don't have it anymore. And then he came back and played the, well. So
the point I was going to make was that if the team gets together, this is, I mean, when you're an athlete, it's always about, look, you can't change a game that you played and lost.
Right.
You can learn from it and move forward. And I think that's the mentality of just about every athlete in sports is, look, we'll learn from the mistakes, but we'll move forward clean slate. And I have a feeling that that's going to be the case in the locker room. So I don't know necessarily that the attitude and the issues that way are going to continue. What you need to talk about is, like you said, is Big Ben back to normal? Of course, he's having to fight for his life because no one respects the run when they play the Steelers.
True.
Is this defense going to be better? It's obvious they missed Ryan Shazier. Are they going to be able to get any pressure on opposing quarterbacks? How is the secondary going to hold up, the linebacking core? So I think those are the questions that are going to have to be answered about the Steelers more so than the locker room. That could be the big question.
Well,
I would be surprised if this team goes 500 down the stretch.
I agree with
surprised.
You. Here's the thing, though. Let's not forget, if we want to try and discount the locker room stuff, Antonio Brown went right at the OC. That's a new offensive coordinator because they got rid of Todd Haley. And so just the fact that he's going to have to try and work with a Le'Veon Bell that he hasn't play called before, the fact that Ben's looked terrible, the fact that Antonio Brown isn't afraid to undress him on the sidelines and voice his displeasure, that's why I say a team shouldn't be dealing with all those off-the-field distractions, let alone when Bell comes back and what the locker room's going to be from what's already done.
Yeah, and I just think you're dealt that hand. You're dealt with that hand. You're dealing with an Antonio Brown that really isn't happy. You're dealing with a Ben Roethlisberger that's not playing like the Big Ben that we knew. You're dealing with an unhappy Le'Veon Bell. I mean, it's just that's what was dealt to you. You're going to have to deal with it because you're already, what, four games into the season. Mm-hmm. What are your options?
It just seems like a lot.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got two in the books. We got 1 hour still to go of the show. So don't go anywhere. Right around the corner, hour number three, and the Mappers will join us. It's the Usual Suspects. Flowers in a hand,
we look good together. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.